Welcome along to Desert Oak Podcast, episode 14. As ever, I'm Greg.
I'm Richard.
I'm Tommy.
Good Tommy, I love it. This week we have news. We have an extended read and watch and play in which features two independent books, If and Bust. And to finish off, we have The Hate Lockers back by popular demand of one person.
Okay. Which is one of us.
My mum.
Oh, bless you, mum.
Let's go. Let's crack on.
Okay, we're here again in Greg's attic. And it's to do a podcast this time, not to get up to what we usually get up to in your attic.
Usually it's stinking.
It's because maybe I have FIFA days and podcasts, and that's about it. You just be quiet about your stuff.
Sorry, yeah.
Have we been up to anything interesting since last time?
Nah, not really.
Cool, good. Let's crack on. See, we've all seen stuff, we've all read stuff. Well, played stuff.
Pretty much been the whole like last couple of weeks indoors, reading, watching.
This is Scottish summer, yeah.
A bit of playing.
I haven't played much.
No. I've been playing a bit.
Really?
Yes, I have actually.
Yes, I have.
Are you going to come back to that, or do you want to tell us what it is?
No, I'll come back to it in a bit.
Okay, well let's get cracking then. We'll just go straight into news, I think, this time.
Aye.
Because we don't actually have a hell of a lot.
It's been quite quiet, hasn't it?
It seems that way. Aye.
One thing I would love to say off the back, and I don't know why we haven't talked about this before, and I don't know why folk aren't as excited about it. Have you seen the trailer for Mario Maker?
No.
No? Do you know what it is?
I'm aware of it. Is it the thing where you...
It's basically, from what I can understand, it's a new Mario game that's coming out for the Wii U, and it gives you 100% creative ownership of all the games. So you can base from all the games going back to like Mario 1 on like the NES... all through the Wii games, the Wii U games, the SNES games, N64. You can basically, like, as you play it, pause it, go, I want to enter a bad guy here, I want to enter like a pipe here. So basically,
it's a level editor.
But it's also a game. So what you do is, it's basically, it comes across as like Nintendo's version of Little Big Planet. You basically create levels, you put them online, people download them, you create, do you know what I mean? So it'll never end.
I'm kind of in for that.
Yeah, I know.
I like Little Big Planet. I've never played many of them.
Little Big Planet.
I played the one that came with the PS4. I think it's Little Big Planet 3. I really enjoyed that. So if there's like a Mario based one,
it seems like such a simple idea, but it was just like, honestly, I was sitting, I was like, what is this Mario Maker? And I looked at it and I was like, I might buy a Wii U for that. I was looking at my bank. I was like, I can't afford a Wii U. I can't just justify. But maybe.
Finding a couple of games out the catalogue that you like, and then maybe you could start saying, oh, well, maybe if we can get those as well.
If you get them, I'll tell you what, like, I don't know if you have ever played the Wii U, but I've played, there was like a Mario Party game, and I can't remember, I think it might just be called Mario Party or whatever, but it's really, really good fun.
I think you've mentioned that actually before.
It's the one that's like really four people play on the telly and one person plays on the tablet.
One plays on the tablet, and they have to all chase you, and for anyone else that's listening that's played it, it's hilarious fun.
The Wii U does seem to be the kind of console that, because a lot of folk are saying that sort of couch co-op's dead, if folk don't play two-player games sitting next to each other anymore, it's all online.
Yeah,
and the Wii U seems to be the kind of console that is kind of still flying that flag. From what I gather, I haven't actually played much of it.
More of a party kind of console, isn't it?
Yeah,
but...
But if that's the thing, if you were having a party or something and you fancy playing some games, you could bust out the Wii U and everybody would have fun.
Everybody can pick up and play it as well. Like, they're not like, you don't have to master... They're not in in-depth games or anything, are they?
It's maybe not something that Nintendo should get flack for. If anything, they should get credit for trying to keep it alive. Well, for me anyway, I think it's a good thing they're trying to keep that alive.
Right.
It's keeping together a mode of gaming that, as you say, seems a little bit outdated now almost.
Yeah, it does.
Which is a shame. But that's a pretty cool piece.
Aye, September the 11th apparently is the release date for it.
Oh, sweet. It's a bad day to be released, apparently. Another thing that I've seen recently. Have you guys seen the trailer for a new Disney Pixar film that's coming out called The Good Dinosaur?
No.
I've heard of it, but...
It's coming out soon. They've just released, like, first feature-length trailer. Not feature-length trailer, shut up. Like, the first trailer-length trailer, I guess. It's like 2.5 minutes long or something. It's almost like photo-realistic environments... meets cartoony dinosaurs, and the idea is that the asteroid that hit Earth that wiped out the dinosaurs misses,
and vanishes the Earth completely.
And just everything just goes on as it would have done, and dinosaurs start to develop alongside humans. And it seems like it's about a dinosaur who's just a young looking dinosaur who's away on his own and meets like a toddler, basically. And they're trying to navigate their way through the perils of Jurassic or whatever ages that is.
It's quite a simple concept, don't it? It's like almost like a sort of Jungle Booky theme.
Yeah, and the trailer for it is typical Disney Pixar. They've got like really nice pieces from the film in it, and it seems like it's going to be another one that has an absolutely beautiful score and a lovely soundtrack and everything like that. And it seems really feel good so far. I'm up for seeing.
We've talked about this before. Pixar don't make bad films.
They don't.
They really make
don't.
Maybe films that dip.
They start off at average.
Cars were pretty rubbish films.
Cars were rubbish, actually. Because I said that before. Because Richard said to me before, he was like, they don't make bad films. And I was like, Cars. He's like, well, I've never seen that. I was like, yeah, it's a bad film. But apart from that, they've been pretty solid.
Not bad.
That's an exception to the rule, isn't it?
Yeah.
I liked it. I don't think I liked it as much as other people liked it, but I liked it. It was alright.
Yeah, that's another conversation for another day.
Saddest start of any.
The sad start of it, that's the best bit of it. After the wife he dies, it gets a bit crap. I know that sounds really bad.
From a storytelling perspective, absolutely. It's because it's so heart-wrenching.
That's quite moving, yeah.
Yeah.
That is real moving.
Pixar films need more death.
Anyway. Fair enough. You be quiet, you leave him alone. Yeah, so that I think that looks pretty cool.
No, I agree. Is there any real estate on that, or it's next year, or...?
2016 or 17.
I think it was 16.
I think no. It says Thanksgiving. I think it said on it, which is November.
Cool. That's actually not too bad. This year then.
Yeah. It's Thanksgiving at the end of the trailer.
Yeah, I just realised I never took them off when I came back. So glad I've realised what was wrong though, because I've been thinking that something was wrong.
You've got your shoes on.
But that's what it turned out to be.
It's good man. Good stuff for the podcast.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but
I'd love to be inside your head.
Cool, let's make it.
Right. Another tidbit of news, which is actually quite exciting, is Mark Hamill. He's back for the voice of Joker in the Kill 'Em Joke
adaptation.
Which is so he's got. Which is just, I don't need to say much more about it.
It's about time. They've been talking about it for a while.
Apparently, the guy who played Batman, voiced Batman before the 52 stuff, has come out and said he wants to voice Batman in it as well, so that the two of them would reunite. I was going to say reignite. That's something different.
They've done the Arkham. They did Arkham Knight. So same voices, but same guys, Arkham Knight. But Mark Hamill's always like, "This is my last Joker role." He says it all the time. He said it for like the Arkham City.
He said that
was his last Joker role. And then there was Arkham Knight. That was his last Joker role. And now there's going to be this one.
I don't mind him playing the Joker.
He's the only person I think could, like, when I read the comics and stuff, I've got Mark Hamill in my head.
Aye.
The voice of the Joker.
He's gone all in on the character, eh? He keeps on telling everyone that this is his last one. He keeps on coming back.
That's good. I like it.
I'm up for it.
Folks still get excited about it, so he must be doing something right.
Yeah, precisely, yeah.
He is the man. He is a Joker.
I've got a wee bit of news on Christopher Nolan's next film.
Yes.
Very, very short piece of news for a very short film, apparently, because he's coming in to do a short film called Key, Q-U-A-Y, about guys called the Key Brothers who make stop motion animation films, and I think it's more of a documentary than a film, like a docu film.
All right, okay. Well, like sort of Senna or like Amy or something like that.
Aye, but much shorter.
Right.
That's what I get from the tweet link that I read. On the bus here.
Do you know what, I actually seen that and I went to read it and it was like, oh, it's about these brothers. I was like, I don't know who they are, so I can't spin this.
Yeah, it was a departure from what he's been doing, or maybe it isn't. I don't really know too much about him outside of the films that the big films that he's done, but
he's another one. He does seem to make quite films, like, well, quite consistently. I've still not seen Interstellar.
I really, really enjoyed Interstellar. I would say watch it on a big screen. Oh. watch it absolutely wrecked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the garden.
That's how I watch all my films.
Through your back window. Yeah.
Oh, I think it was something else. one tiny quick little bit of news as well. This has got me excited, and this is almost like this shouldn't even be news. This isn't news. This doesn't come anywhere close to news, but this got me excited. Because I remember talking to you guys about, I think it was when we were playing Rocket League, and I was saying, like, because it's going to be PS4, PC, cross-compatible eventually. And I was saying, like, basically games on PC are just, like, first-person shooters are just so much better than console games. Well, apparently on October the 9th or the 6th, sometime early October, PlayStation 4 is getting its first keyboard and mouse controller so that you can play first-person shooters. People who are good at PC first-person shooters can play them on console using the same kind of controls. But it's like a wee mini keyboard that is just, it's basically just used for gaming. It looks ace, man. If there's any decent first-person shooters come out, not Call of Duty, because I'm done with that, I will definitely be getting it.
Thing is, though, with the Call of Duty, there's going to be a really, really steep increase in quality of the players that come from PC and start absolutely destroying anyone else who plays.
The thing is, this will also give you a great excuse. If you play Call of Duty and you start getting killed all the time, you can basically say, well, that guy's clearly got a mouse and keyboard, that's unfair. Mm. There you go. And as soon as you get a mouse and keyboard and start getting killed, then you've got no excuse.
There you go.
But honestly, man, because I used to PC game quite a bit, and I'm excited by that. But this will probably maybe get 2% of folk excited. I got excited.
And wonder who the other person was.
I don't think we'll ever know. I can finish on this one, which is these are some pretty shocking things that I've got. Which one of these do you hope isn't real? Adam Sandler has been rumoured to have secured a part in the Green Lantern Corps movie.
That one.
It's been announced that Fallout 4 has been delayed by 8 months.
Ooh.
And Marvel are aiming to reboot their whole franchise in around 10 years to introduce characters to a new generation.
Oh, that's fine. Greg, you'll be dead in 10 years, so I don't know you only care by then.
That's true, actually.
Greg won't be around to say, no, you can't do that.
Wait, why would I be dead? I find that very offensive, although I have got a really terrible diet. In saying that, though, the Green Lantern movie is out in, like, fucking 5 years, isn't it?
That's in 5 years' time.
I'm
going to say Fallout 1.
Tom?
To say which one you hope isn't true.
Isn't true, yeah.
Green Lantern.
Cool. They're all fake, I made them all up.
So okay. There we go.
Right, here we go! Reading, watching, and playing. That's what we're going to go into next. I don't know why I said it like that.
I'm liking these voices, though.
I don't. Well, it's an opportunity to do some
voiceovers.
Some voiceovers and some accents.
So Pixar, if you're listening.
Yeah.
I can do two voices. But not my voice and that voice. So get in touch.
Yeah. I can do a weird newsy sound as well. Anyway, reading, watching, playing is a feature that we've been doing since probably the inception of this podcast, where we just discuss what we have been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been playing, and we're quite happy this week because we've got ourselves two independent type of releases that we're going to review. One, what we're going to fly straight into, is a sci-fi anthology by Peter Cimenti called If.
Published by Alterna Comics.
Yep.
160 pages of sci-fi goodness.
Yeah. 16 short stories?
16, by 36 different creators, I believe.
Man, that's a list of facts right there.
Including writers, artists, editors and letters.
I'm sure the check will be in the post for us by now.
Yeah, boy! And I think I think they're going to continue the trend and do the next volume. It'll be about something else, a particular theme they'll pick.
Yeah, I read this.
I've read that.
I quite like that idea. That's quite a good idea. It gives artists a different, and writers a different chance to.
They're both. It gives creators.
Well, creators, different genres to get stuck into.
Absolutely. It gives a lot of people a chance to promote what they can do as well. Yeah. Because presumably this will act as a platform.
Yeah, it's like a showcase, isn't it?
Yeah, for people who are writing, people who are artists, people who even there. I'm sure we even saw an editor in there that was one of the people that was contributor to one of the stories. But what we've done for this one is we've gone through it, and we have chosen three stories that we would like to focus on most. So apologies if we're not covering your one.
It's just because there's 16, and it would take.
It would take forever.
You don't want to give everything away.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're short stories, you can't say like, we can't, well, you could do an overall review, but it seems more fun to kind of get into the...
Yeah, you don't want to basically tell folk what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. Again, it would take ages to do that. So what I've done is, we've chosen three, and who would like to start off? In fact, which one do we want to start with?
Well, yeah. I think me and Greg both read one that we both liked, mm-hmm. in particular. It was called Love by the Numbers, or Love by Numbers.
Love by Numbers, yeah.
The story was by Glenn Matchett, and the art was by Dan Lauer, I think.
I think that's what you said.
I'm gonna mispronounce a shed load of names.
Apologies in advance again.
Absolutely. And it's the title story. It's like the cover story. Like the cover is based on a page of art. All the art in the whole book is in black and white and grey tones.
I quite like that in the sense that it wasn't... They all seem to be on the same wavelength, if that makes sense. It, like, rather than going from like full-on colour out of black and white to...
It's less jarring.
Do you know what I mean? It seemed to flow a bit better.
I like this guy's art as well, Dan's art. I like that. It was stark black and white, which I'm a fan of. That sort of thing.
Yes, we know.
As you know.
We know that, don't we?
I liked his art. I thought it was quite reminiscent of Bruce Timm's art, the producer of the DC animated films.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it had a really kind of clean line, and had a good grasp and a good power over the panels and how they were laid out and what they were shown. And normally quite a cinematic feel and style for it. I really enjoyed that.
Do you know what it was? It was like, it kind of reminded me of, you know when you used to get those like little short films before like Pixar things that should have some like should have some sort of like sad music over it or some sort of, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I did.
That's how it came across. I quite liked it. It was, I suppose it was quite an innocent story, but a bit dark towards the, do you know what I mean? Dark undertones. I don't want to say what happens.
Exactly. It's hard to review these things without giving too much away because it's such a short story. But yeah, I know what you mean. Innocent kind of look in, and then it's got sinister undertones.
Yeah, it does. It has very dark undertones. I like that though. I like dark things.
I like the darkness as well.
Night.
I'm most comfortable in the dark.
That's weird.
Yeah, so yeah, we both liked that one.
Yeah, it was good, aye.
It was well good.
I liked one as well. It was one quite early on called Bigfoot Little Hope.
This was a good one.
Yeah, you liked this one.
I really enjoyed this one.
Now, I apologise again with the names. Written by Chaz Pangborn. Is that right? Yep. Yeah. And art, how do you say that?
I think it's Marino La Claustra. Yeah. Or Mariano La Claustra.
Apologies. I can't actually read. I wrote it down, I can't read more handwriting.
Mariano La Claustra. Yeah, Mario. Cool. Okay. So that's you name checked about six times there.
No, do you know what I liked about this? It was the fact that it was different from the other stories. It was more of an innocent story. It was more like,
yes.
It was funny. It was a really humorous story. Yeah. It didn't. One thing as well, it was like, because I know it's like a sci-fi. Like all the stories are sci-fi themed. It didn't come across as your typical sci-fi story. If that makes sense. A lot of the stories have recurring themes of like other worlds and spaceships and
robots,
your usual sci-fi stuff,
nature versus technology and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. This was just a fun wee idea,
straight a piece of fun. That's right. Yeah, it revolves around Bigfoot. He's real within the comic, and it's sort of it's a story about how he keeps on trying to approach people in the woods and like get people to come on dates with him, and as soon as they find out,
who is?
He actually is. They run off screaming, and he basically decides he's had enough, and he cleans himself up, shaves and stuff, and then starts going on more dates. And it's like he's got like a dating profile, and
Do you know what it was? It was basically just like giving the monster a Bigfoot just a normal lad personality.
Yeah,
like, just comes home, watches football, drinks some beers.
It's got like
just a lad.
Do you know what one of the cool things is about it? You're right. He's a bit of a lad. Lives in a cave. He's got himself a man cave.
Yeah,
couch set up and the TV and stuff like that. I hope that's what you were going for, Mariano.
Because that's what we take from it. Yeah, that was good. I liked that one as well. Do you have any other ones, Tommy, that you...
Yeah, I've got another couple that I quite liked. One was a lot further on in the book. It was called Alone, by Mike Salt and Fabian Cobos. I really like the art in that one. It's like set in space, and it deals with like this kind of isolated spaceman. Again, it's hard to talk about without
too much. I know what you mean. I've read that one as well, and it was the... It did have that kind of creepy, kind of... almost like hot space horror movie, like waking up and it's just you.
Yeah. Like, you did feel like he was isolated. You did get the feeling of alone.
Aye.
Because...
it was empty.
It was empty, and then there wasn't any descriptive boxes used.
Mm.
There was his dialogue in a couple of panels on the first page. Of the whole second page, there was no dialogue or descriptive boxes at all. It was just shots of different parts of the spaceship and behind them, and shot from up front and behind and stuff like
yeah,
that. That was good. It really built the feeling of isolation up.
And that was
a good job, well done, I think, there.
Yeah, there was a recurring thing that happened throughout the anthology as well, that there would be sets of panels that were completely minimalist in that they did not have any dialogue. They were relying completely on the art to put across what the story was trying to do, and in cases it worked really, really well.
That's good though. It's like, don't tell, just show, because you can't do that.
Yeah,
you don't need to oversell something.
That's what we do when we're writing something.
Yeah.
Eight things going on in one panel.
I never said anything about that.
You didn't have to, it's in the eyes.
Yeah, it is. What, the way that they're weeping?
One of the other ones that I thought did well for being minimalist was one called Moon, which was by Alex Ekman-Lawn, who was the writer, artist and letterer for the story. It's basically the story about how the moon gets into the sky from a really science fiction-y perspective, and there may have been more to it that I've just not read into deeply enough.
No, you're right, but it's one of those things where, like, when you first seen it, you weren't sure what was kind of going on, if you like. Sort of led you on a garden path, essentially, and then sort of curved off.
Yeah.
Which was quite good. Yeah, sort of lead you astray a little bit.
Aye, absolutely.
It was quite nice. Like, it was great, and you're saying the art was good in that as well.
It was really sort of, it was almost charcoal-y.
It was.
It was really cool.
It was good.
Would that have been done with big, like, presumably big thick pencils?
It could have been digital. They can do a lot. You can do a lot digitally now, so you could probably
get the same sort of feel. Like,
well, I wouldn't say so, but I'm more of a traditionalist. It's mainly because I can't use digital.
Brim and proper.
I like that. I'm like, I'm not that technical.
Are you like the old guy who's best, man? The old guy who's like, the internet's a fad.
Technology, right? They'll be gone in a few years.
Computers, what are computers?
Try the radio one.
With regards to art, actually, I want to give a shout out to the last story in it, one called Ticket Home. The art's by a guy called David Bram, and the script was Robert Menegas. I don't know how you say his name again, man, sorry.
How's it spelled?
Menegas. Menegas.
Menegas.
We'll go with that. Menegas. Hey, good. I thought the art and that was great. I really liked it. It's how do you describe it? It's basically a little boy in school who has a weird condition where, I won't say what it is because that will spoil it, but let's just say, like, the condition results in, like, the art style changing halfway through the story. And it got the art style got, like, really kind of twisted, but like really exaggerated and
distorted from what
you're distorted from what you're used to seeing, and it worked really well. And when it goes back to the normal art style as well, in quite a clever way. Quite liked it. Just a good story. It was. Do you know what? It felt like almost like the start of like an ongoing thing. If you like, it was like a little introduction. Like
you could.
Yeah, you could read more.
There could be more to that story.
Yeah, it was like an introduction to a character, if you like. But it's good what it is. A wee self-contained story, but I felt you could have went on with that.
I like that. I've read another one. Well, I've read all of them, but Life in the Game, which was by Michael Malkin and Novo Malgapo, I think you pronounce your name. Did the art?
We should have picked ones with easy names.
Yeah, Kevin Lloyd,
John Smith.
I like this one. I tell you why I like this one. It's like, I won't say anything about the actual story itself, and I won't give it away. I like the art, I like the writing. The art was cool. I thought it kind of had like a Silver Age feel to it, like Silver Age kind of comic book stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why I liked it, because this to me is what like a short story should do, for me personally.
Yeah, okay.
It's like, you start reading it, you're like, oh, I know what this is about, and you read it, and you're like, oh yeah, there's no surprises here, I know where this is going, and then like in the last one or two pages as a revelation or a twist in the tale, and you go, oh, I didn't actually see that coming. That's quite clever.
Yeah, you're satisfied.
Yes. Absolutely. That's what I'm like. And then the stuff before, I was like, oh, I know where this is going. This is kind of average. Makes more sense because of the twist at the end.
So it's clever. It's been well thought out.
Exactly. And I'm like, if I'm like, oh, you know what? I like that. That's really clever. I'm like, that's what I look for in a short story.
Well done, you, Mr. Writer. right, but I think we could probably all, unless do you guys no. particularly cover any more?
No, I think we've done quite a few there, haven't we?
So that's the If anthology, again compiled I believe by a chap named Peter Cementi, and by
Alterna Comics as a publisher.
It's
I don't know how it's getting released, if it's online or not. Because we got sent a review copy.
That makes us sound professional.
We asked for it, but it's fine. So check them both out on Twitter, actually. They're both up there. We'll maybe send out a wee link, actually.
Definitely.
Once we send the podcast out as well. So before we go on to our very, very local to Edinburgh talent that we're going to cover, we'll go through a couple of more things first that we've each been reading, watching and playing. Does anyone want to jump in first, or?
Yes, I will jump in.
Gregovich.
Splash! Get my speedos on.
Speedos are awesome.
Wee budgie smugglers. Big budgie smugglers, sorry.
I've heard the wee ones.
Yes. Easier to wash. Right, I have been reading. I got it at Comic-Con a few weeks ago now.
Mm-hmm.
The Scott Snyder story, Witches.
Smashing.
Man, it is. Yeah, it is smashing. That is the best way to describe it. It is volume one, but it's six issues. It's a six-issue miniseries, so it's the whole thing. And it's a very, very dark horror. I've never read a horror book before. I've never read a proper horror book before. One that played on my mind. And I remember you saying about the horror book and that, and I did have that whole really, really ignorant viewpoint of, it's a comic book. How can it be scary?
Mm.
So I read it, and it wasn't like, I wasn't turning the pages going, oh my god.
What? Put it away! Hiding it behind the couch.
Just set it on the coffee table and hide it behind the couch yourself.
You didn't even
I was getting Nicola to read it to me from the other side of the room. No, but it wasn't like one like that, but it was one of those stories. Is basically what I'd done was I finished reading it, and then I went up the stairs to the toilet, and I done that little thing. When I came down the stairs from the toilet, I ran down the stairs a little bit faster. You know what I mean, eh? Like when you've seen like a horror film or something like that, you just kind of go, check over your shoulder. Oh, shit, okay. But man, I'm not going to give anything away about it, because half the fun of it was I didn't know what it was about. And that was like the whole, like when things happened, you were like, oh shit, it's dark. But it's essentially about a small town. I don't think it's Southern America, I think.
Somewhere like
Southern America. And it's a small town, which is 60 years ago, something happens. A family get killed. And then this new family in the present day move into this town.
All right.
Because something happens.
Okay.
And it's basically, it's got a little bit of a sort of, this sounds silly, but it's got a little bit of a sort of Hot Fuzz feel to it. Where it's almost like the whole town is like, for the greater good, right?
Oh, right.
The whole town know this secret. This
like
family.
Like that.
Like this, the whole town know the secret. This family don't know the secret, but this family get dragged into the secret. And it basically plays on like really dark emotions, actually, because the main character in it is a teenage girl who's, you could say she's got depression, no, isn't she?
She's plagued by mental, I think it's an anxiety thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And her dad gets really bad mental.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that does that thing where like someone's like, oh my god, look at that car over there, and like everyone's like, what car? And that, and again, the main character's like, "There's a car. I'm telling you, there's a car over there."
Like,
he starts questioning themselves.
Yeah,
and
totally. They think because they've recently went through a traumatic experience, like it might just be an aftershock.
Yeah, that's
like
exactly
that.
It. But it's quality. The art's by Jock, and the whole thing is just I couldn't put it down. It wasn't one of those things I put down and come back later. I just read the whole thing in one sitting. The only thing I will say about it though was about a quarter of the way through it, I was like, I know how this is going to end.
Did you call it?
To an extent, yes. I called what happened, but I didn't call why it happened.
I called what had happened in the wrong way, though. I didn't get it exactly right.
Yeah,
I was
that's what I mean.
I was like, man, you fucking Bastards got me.
Yeah. I was like, I called it quite early on. But I was doing that thing where I was reading it and being like, oh, please be wrong. Please be wrong.
I thought
I was right as well, and then I read it, I was like, oh, you got me.
This is where I quite like being unintuitive to stories like that, because I get a really big surprise all the time.
Take Arkham Link, for example. The art's really dirty looking, isn't it? Like, the way that he does his inks is real thick inks and stuff.
Well, that's the design thing.
Of the actual witches is, I thought it was pretty damn freaky, man. I've not seen anything like that before, really.
No, you're right. There was a bit at the back of the, because I got the trade edition, there's a bit at the back of it which shows you the process of the art, and it's like seven different layers per panel. One was like drawn, one was ink, one was coloured, one was then coloured again, one was coloured a third time, then one was like painted almost, like the sort of slashes across it and like put on top of it, and it just works so well. It's brilliant. So yeah, I recommend it, get it.
Cool. Witches, everyone buy Witches. Tommy,
I've been playing Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes on PS4 with a PlayStation Plus subscription. Cha-ching, it's already paying for itself.
Cha-ching.
I quite liked it. You played it, didn't you?
I played a little bit of it. I've got it. I didn't actually play it here, I played it somewhere else. I just randomly played it in someone's house for a bit. I liked it, but...
they
weren't awake. The thing I'd say though was, the first thing it got me, it's not a Metal Gear game. It doesn't feel like a Metal Gear Solid game.
Really?
Aye. Well, like, Metal Gear 1, Metal Gear 2, Metal Gear 3, doesn't feel like a...
The old Metal Gear. Always a little bit different. But the stealth's ramped right up in this game, I would say.
Do you think so?
I think so, yeah.
I went about just absolutely slaughtering people.
Well, you can do that.
I drove a van, and everyone was just like, oh, there's a van coming. I actually turned up, I was like the fucking A-team. I turned in a van and got out with a grenade launcher and machine gun.
It's there. You can find it, but like you get a shit ranking for that. Because if you kill anybody...
It's not about the ranking, Tommy. It's fucking war.
There's no war, it can be stealth. You don't have to kill people, Greg. It is one of those games though where it's like you will get a better ranking if you complete the level with no alerts and no kills and you put people to sleep.
You'll have no fun.
Except while you go through buildings and go into like they tell you where armories are, like when you interrogate guys, like there's an armory over here and it's got 16 grenades and a rocket launcher in it, you're like, well, that's tempting. No, go to sleep.
That's very precise.
that really appeals to me. I've always quite liked the stealthy games, and like confession time, I've never played a Metal Gear Solid game, but I think we all know.
When we talked about boss battles a few weeks ago.
I've watched a lot of this stuff on YouTube because I feel like it's got to the point now where I'm so far away from the start of the Metal Gear series that it's just like, I'll just leave it, everyone else can enjoy it, tell me how much they're enjoying it, it's fine, I don't mind about it.
Actually, the thing is, right, you could even just pick up, like, you could play Ground Zeroes if you really wanted to, but you could probably just pick up Phantom Pain and have a good time with it, because it's like going back in time. Like, Metal Gear 1 and 2 are set after, like, this is back in time now. Like, it's not Solid Snake.
Right.
It's Naked Snake, who eventually becomes Big Boss, who's the big baddie in, like, 1 and 2, but they were, like, fucking 15 years ago or whatever, so.
You could
you don't have to know all that. You can just pick it up and just play it. I think you can, like.
And be done. So it's worth picking up.
I'm stoked for the fifth one.
That's essentially what the game's only like 5 hours long or something, isn't it?
Well, the game's ridiculous in that it's just one map. There's a fortress, like a base camp thing that there's the enemies and you break into. That's it. There's only the one map, but you come at it from different directions and you've got different objectives and side missions. When it first came out, it was like full price game.
Yeah, it was. A lot of folk were going fucking daft because it was like a really small game. But in saying that, it's almost like when it came out, it was like a PS4 launch title, I think. Right. And it was almost like a check out what we can do on this machine. But also, it's almost kind of like, by the way, there's another Metal Gear game coming out in a few years, which is going to be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And this is it.
In that respect, you're like, oh man, I fucking kind of.
It does its job. Sad that a game's been released to do that. A whole game has been released.
Especially if it's full price, though. If I'd paid full price for it, I'd be like, man, I'm raging for this.
Yeah.
But because I got it for free. I'm like, yeah, it's great.
Anything you get for free, yeah. Yes, it's brilliant. This is the best.
I'm going to carry on with the ridiculously gritty, dark theme that we've got here going on. And I saw Inside Out, Disney Pixar. obviously, and I really enjoyed it. I think as we've said before on these podcasts, Disney Pixar just didn't make bad films. They start off at average, and whereas Cars is maybe
the low point
to the rule, or the low point. But Inside Out is brilliant. Bold, refreshing, funny. Never loses any of the famous Disney Pixar charm, which is pretty much a trademark to every film as it comes along. Funny jokes. Every character is likable.
That's good. Is there a villain? Is there an actual villain in the film?
Not really. No, it's more of a case of events happen that cause peril that mean that the main characters have to get back to a certain point to make things function properly.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like something's been left in the wrong hands, but it's been left in good guys' hands that can't operate the thing properly.
It's quite refreshing the fact that there's not just like your bog standard bad guy.
Yeah, there's barely a bad guy in it. Aye, to be honest with you, which isn't even like another refreshing thing about it. It doesn't have a death to pull at the heartstrings. There's a heart wrenching moment in it, but it's like a really different approach to it. But it's quite sad, and it's quite like it probably resonates with a lot of people. It's one of these things that near the end and blah blah blah. Anyway, I totally recommend going to see it, and there's some absolutely hilarious bits at the end, in the credits, where you get to see inside other minds, and you get to see inside the minds of a dog and a cat.
Right.
Both of them are fucking hilarious. Absolutely brilliant. I think that's the first time that we've sworn on this podcast. I'm sorry.
I think I swore earlier, but
we've got one swear each. That's fine.
One swear each. By the way, actually, back on the Inside Out thing, I seen something very quickly today. The numbskulls from the Beano or the Dandy, I can't remember, I think it's the Beano. The numbskulls basically were like Inside Out. It was a comic strip that was essentially Inside Out back in like when I was wee.
Oh, wait, yeah.
And I think in their latest storyline, they have spoofed Inside Out, or they have addressed Inside Out in some sort of way. Because some guy tweeted just basically saying, like, finally, numbskulls are getting like their, and they're shot in the spotlight, which is brilliant.
But I'm surprised Beano's in. Was it Beano's or Dandy's? Was it a Beano or a Dandy?
I can't remember.
I'm surprised they're still going, to be honest.
They're fucking quality.
They're old hat,
as we swear.
Controversial, right?
I wanted a comic. I said to Mum, I want a comic for the newsagents when I was a lad. And she came back with a Beano or a Dandy. Uh-huh. I was raging.
Are you expecting the visitors?
I wanted a fucking Batman, or a Spider-Man, or a Flash.
So Tommy, your actual anger here is at your mum?
No, right? I don't have any ill feelings towards my mother.
I've got some lovely feelings. Anyway, let's
get into what you might call the main event of this wee section, if you're that way inclined. It's Bust, the comic by Edinburgh-based writer Dave Cook, and art by Chris O'Toole. I'm not sure if he is Edinburgh-based, to be honest with you, but he does the art.
He sounds Edinburgh. That's more of a name that we can read.
Chris O'Toole and Dave Cook. That's what we're looking for.
That's a proper name.
So it's a Kickstarter crowdfunded project that's been allowed to go into print and go into other forms of media through crowdfunding. There's a story of a guy called Jack, who's an ex blackjack dealer living in a post-apocalyptic US, fighting to save his wife and kid from like this hellacious diseased wasteland that is now the United States. In particular, they're in a place, Austin, Texas. Find themselves there, where they begin to establish some sort of semblance of life, and before they know it, like this evil business magnate starts to run Austin and sort of corrupt the city, and he becomes an evil and twisted bastard, basically.
Stop swearing, fuck's sake.
Hey. You're very good. And the story basically is... It's a straight to the point story. It's a simple enough story.
Do you know
to follow.
What? I was quite.
It's effective for that.
It is. Sorry, I've butted in there, man.
You have shot.
On you go.
Never mind. No, it was a story when I first got given it. It was like post-apocalyptic. Right. Now, I don't know how people feel about this, but I like post-apocalyptic. I know a lot of focus has been done to death.
It's a popular medium.
It's one of those things that even if you know what's coming, it's still enjoyable. I don't know what it is. It's still enjoyable. I still like the whole post-apocalyptic thing. When I first got it as well, I was looking through it again. It's black and white, which and I can't help but draw similarities to it. It was like The Walking Dead. It gave the whole kind of same sort of
digital
feel.
Gray. I don't know, I never read Walking Dead, but this has got like digital grey tones in it.
Well, aye.
Yeah,
definitely. But without sounding too arty-farty, it almost gives that whole kind of, like, if it was all colourful and rich in colour, I think it would lose the tone of the story. It'd
lose the grit.
Yeah, certainly. Exactly. Yeah. It's all about the whole, like, struggle, survival. So you don't really want somebody rocking about in a pink t-shirt and a big cheesy smile and that. You don't want that. You want death. I like death and darkness.
And destruction.
And destruction. Sorry, man, just one quick thing as well.
Yep, sorry,
on the back of it was, I'm hoping this is what they were going for, but when I was reading it, I was like, this has basically taken every decent aspect from a B-movie and rolled it all together.
Aye.
Like, I'm really hoping that's what they were going for, because the B-movie thing was, that's what I picked up on straight away, and I really liked that aspect of it, the fact that it's a bit kind of violent and over the top, but
it's not
that's what you want.
It's not like book inducing gore.
It's not like Saw or anything like that.
It's pretty violent, but as comics go,
it's kind of violent the same sort of way as something like Mad Max would be, or something.
I thought the way that they looked and the way it was designed in the first few pages I was reading, I was like, oh man, this is like an 80s Escape from LA, like, you know, those 80s sci fi action films.
That's what I mean.
I had that feeling to it. That's what I thought until the story unfolded and got a bit bigger and stuff like that.
Aye, because it seems like it's almost two stories rolled into one, and there's like this, there's the interweaving past that the guy Jack has, and telling it from his perspective, telling it in a past tense, and then goes along to the present day and where he is now and what he's up to, and starts telling it from almost like further into the future, and you get to know more about the main characters. You get to see development between characters, developments within stories. It's everything that you need a comic to be.
Definitely.
To build a coherent story. I think going back to the elements of, did I mention the plague?
No, you didn't.
Basically, there's a plague that's taken over. That's a pretty big detail, miss. So there's a plague that's basically rendered the states sort of like incapacitated. Some people fall to it, some people don't. And the writer, again, Dave Cook, has been pretty keen to make clear it isn't just another post-apocalyptic zombie story. It's a post-apocalyptic story that he wants to draw comparisons to Fallout for.
It is very, very central. It's centred on the humans and the characters, like the human side of them, more than like this big world and what's wrong with it and all the things that's happened since the fall of man and stuff like that. It's centric on the personalities of the characters themselves, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Which is what you need, though. You need that rather than just like something like World War Z, where it's like, which was a great book, shite film, but kind of basically took you the whole world and said, right, yeah, this country fell. You're like, well, that's great. But this, that just hones in on like one character and gives you his like,
and this is how it affected this guy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's pretty, it was pretty brutal.
It's a pretty harrowing story for him as well. Like, it's,
because you said Fallout, actually, I've just clicked in my head. Like, I'm sure he makes reference to Raiders in it. And the guy actually looks like,
He does.
Yeah. He looks like the guy from Fallout 3. I never made a connection to that before.
There you go. I'd read that on, I think it was maybe on the Kickstarter or their WordPress site. There you go, wee plug for you. Overall, it's a perfectly good comic. It's ongoing as well. Ongoing, absolutely. So there's a second one coming out. I think they've started the campaign on Kickstarter to get the second issue out there, which I believe, if, I don't know how Kickstarter works, if you search for things, but certainly if you either follow @DaveSCook on Twitter or just search Bust the Comic online, it'll bring you all of the information that you need, and you can go from there.
We can fire links as well.
We can fire links, fire pictures, and I'll do that.
I was going to mention as well, like, as I was reading this, I pay special attention to the art, obviously, when I read these things.
No, do you?
Yeah, obviously, yeah. And when I was reading it, I was like, oh man, that guy looks really specific looking, this character in it. I was like, he doesn't look like he's been designed like the rest of the characters look. And I was like, oh man, he's put his pal in it. I was like, that's what he's done. One of his pals has been like, oh, can I be in your comic?
Really?
And he's like, wait for it. This is what I thought. Because they're so you just tell a mile away that it's different.
Okay.
So I was like, oh man, that's really cool. And then I kept reading and these faces kept on popping up in the foreground and the background, and I'm like, man, there's loads of people that knows in this, it's photo referenced.
Yeah.
I was absolutely 100% sure of it. And then when I went onto the website,
spot on.
After I'd read it, and they were like, there's a 50 quid, if you put 50 quid or over into the Kickstarter, if you contribute 50 quid or over, they will put you in the comic.
Oh.
No questions asked, you will be in the comic.
Yeah.
But was there a payment for characters? Because I'm sure one of them actually got to be a character as well.
Yeah, like you had lines and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how it worked out.
Man, I missed all of this.
Get on the web.
I'll read that again.
Get on the web. Right, we're overrunning a little bit. But I mean, that's
time.
Again, follow the dudes on Twitter, Dave S. Cook and Bust the Comic. Look for that. If Anthology is at Peter Cementi and I think it's at Alterna Comics. I think maybe their Twitter handle. If not, then Google them and you'll get a wee look at.
You'll find them. Just use Google.
Lazy bastards, Google them. Right, that's us, and we'll move on from there to the next section.
I was wanting you to ring that bit sooner, but never mind.
Revisiting the Hate Locker for our feature this week. Hate Locker is basically, if you've seen Room 101, it's basically that. And if you haven't, we're all just going to sit here and talk about things that we're not really big fans of. And we're going to condemn one of them to the Desert Wheels Hate Locker at the end of this section. So I'm going to take it right out of the blocks. And I'm going to say my bugbear is the increasing amount of boring villains that you're getting in movies. Case in point. In fact, even before that, the point of this isn't as shallow as it just being a born villain. It's a villain that's being born that can take the wind out of the sails of a film. Cases in point, as I say. In Ant-Man, Darren Cross / Yellow Jacket is just another bald guy in a suit who is a bit mean and has technology that is a little bit more sophisticated or powerful than the protagonists. And he has a fight with them and he loses. And there's never any point in the film where you think to yourself, oh man, the hero could be in trouble here. How is he going to beat him?
Yeah.
He's just going to beat him. He'll just beat. It doesn't matter how it happens, he'll just beat him. And the true hero of the film is as he was. He started off as Ant-Man, he finished as Ant-Man. That's it. There is progression within the character, but the bad guy just... Meh.
I was saying to Tommy, he was only there to get Ant-Man in the Avengers movies. It was pretty much like, we need Ant-Man in the Avengers films, we need to have some sort of bad guy in this.
Yeah, and there's
no fault.
Yeah, Darren Cross / Yellow Jacket has been that. Other mentions that I'm going to go into really quickly. Malekith from Thor 2. I can barely remember what he looked like. In my head he's Voldemort. I can't even remember.
He's Noel Fielding. He looks like Noel Fielding.
I remember Voldemort. Good. I can't remember a single word, never mind a line of his dialogue, and I can't even remember what his power was. I don't know, it was something to do with like portals or something.
He's a magician, he's an evil magician.
He's a chef as well.
But that's the thing, if he's an evil magician, he should be more memorable than that.
I totally agree. I think most of the Marvel villains are utter poop.
The thing is with this one though is that in any case, like in Thor 2, Loki was there and he stole the show anyway, so it was a point in having Malekith there in the first place. Lizard from Ant-Man 2, from Amazing Spider-Man 2, pish. Okay. And it's like you're just sort of, it's like you've got the audience that you had to believe that, like, you need to get an audience to believe that a bad guy can bleed. Like, not just be knocked off of a cliff onto jaggy rocks. It's like
you need the Joker.
Joker's probably the best of, the antithesis to what I'm trying to say. Aye. So that's me.
Fine. Good. Yeah. That was quick, man. I'll make this
Boom.
Work as well.
Boom. That's it in the locker.
That's it.
It's wavering outside.
Watch
the locker,
out for the barbed wire.
It's waiting.
Right.
There's only one of these goes in.
All right, is that the way it goes?
You'll get your turn, Tom. You'll get your turn. Patience.
Mine's beer snobbery.
Explain.
I will fucking explain. Right. Oh, sweeties. Right. I like nice beer. Having nice things is nice. What I don't like is people who put you down and are very pretentious about beer. I don't know when beer education became a thing. became like a sort of hipster thing.
Compulsory thing. Yeah. You need to know about beer.
Like, give you an example in point. I was in a pub the other night and I walked in, all the beers crafted, brewed in the pub. The guy was like, what can I get you? And I was like, well, you're asking me that as if I should know. Don't know what any of these beers are. Right, what beer do you want? I was like, I like, so I had Guinness. Give you this. It was black, fine. White head, fine. He was like, that's been brewed in a whiskey barrel, so you can really taste the whiskey flavour coming through, and it's 7.9% alcohol. And I was like, so it's nothing like Guinness. Nothing at all.
Quite the water doing whiskey.
I was like, it's like, it's nothing like Guinness. But he was like, give me all the hard sell and the tasters, and then saying like, and he was like, what else you like? I was like, oh, I like a pint of best. And it was like, oh, if you say that again, you're out. And I was like, oh,
I'll do you a favour, I'll just
leave. Well, that's the thing, this would never work in any other like industry. Imagine if you went to the cinema and says like, oh, can I get two tickets to that film and some salted popcorn? And they went, salted popcorn? We only do lavender popcorn here, son. Or dog shit and peach popcorn.
And the film you want to see is shite.
Aye, exactly. You should be going to see an art film that's in black and white. You're putting me off. You're putting me off the fucking product. Footlight tenons. That's another thing as well, actually. That annoys me as well. Sorry, I'm in flow. Oh, tenants, you can't drink tenants. Tenants say chabby and poor, a poor beer, blah, 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 blah. If you go in and ask, I like tenants, they go, oh, I have something that tastes just like tenants, but it's dearer. And I'm like, well, it's the same fucking thing.
Aye.
Anybody who uses the word hops, anybody who describes, no, anybody who describes a beer by going, you can only taste the peat and the hops in this, you're like, it's fucking beer.
It tastes like beer then?
It's beer, right? I'll be honest, I did buy that pint the guy gave me.
Argument out the window.
No, it's not a thing. I don't understand. It's not a thing. Beer, being educated about beer is fine, but don't talk down to folk and confuse folk.
Which is the main point in case, don't be a fucking snob to people that you want to get interested in the thing that you're trying to flog.
Aye,
it's like you're trying to sell down to them. That's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And because someone doesn't know something about beer, you can just talk utter shite and pass it off as knowledge. And they're like, oh, good, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Shite, nonsense. Mm. Fuck beer. No, wait. Haven't thought that through. Right, okay, Tommy, pass over to you.
This is one that you've been wanting to come for weeks.
Yes.
Podcasts. Here we go.
Many.
That's it for the podcast.
I have 2 pages of notes on this. These bastards are just trying. Censor me.
Oh, you've got like 6 minutes.
you've got 6 minutes.
Right, okay. I'm going to rag on and put in a hate locker, hopefully, DC's Convergence storyline crossover from the summer just passed. The reason or reasons why I'm going to tell you all about them just now.
Good.
Right, so I have to give you a quick kind of thing. Basically, it's like they're going to go back and visit previous timelines and pull these cities out from previous timelines and put them all in the one world, and they've got to do battle.
Right.
Right, okay, so that's basically it. So they're looking to kind of, it's marketed as, it's going to feature all these legendary storylines and characters from DC's history.
Which sounds cool.
Sounds awesome.
It's a selling point, certainly.
Absolutely. Right. It's plot specific, like they're, all these cities are on one world and they've got domes that cover them, right?
Right.
And the domes and the cities have been there for 1 year prior to the story starting, when you start reading it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And their powers don't work when they're under the dome.
Who's? The heroes?
Anybody's.
Right.
That's why they can't escape the dome. That's the only reason why. Right. Why it's been a year, don't know.
I was going to ask, but thanks for clearing up.
Absolutely no fucking idea. It's been a year. And so in the main story, you've got like this group of heroes from the Earth 2 universe who are the main cast in the main story. Earth 2 is a parallel universe to Earth 1, which is the main DC. It's been around for ages, but this particular cast they're using from the current New 52 Earth 2 series, which I haven't really read. And they're used in the current storyline. So they're the main cast. So they're not legendary, really.
Right.
They're not memorable. They're not getting pulled from the lore. They are pretty current, and they need more exposure, basically. So these characters are the main characters in this story.
Right.
So the main story just deals with them in the entire way through. In the crossover books, you get the domes coming down and the cities battling each other. Okay.
Right, okay.
There was a fucking shit ton of crossover books. Like a fucking ridiculous amount of crossover books. I got like 7 or 8 of them, and each crossover book lasted 2 issues. The whole event was over in 2 months. Like the whole thing was done.
That seems quite quick.
It was really quick.
For something that seems that significant.
Exactly. The main story was due every week for 2 months, so that's 8 chapters. The crossover books were multitude of crossover books, and they had like 2 chapters to each story. It was like the 8 that I got, 2 were really, really good. And another 2 were average, and 4 were absolutely fucking abysmal. Poor writing, poor artwork, poor stories, poor use of the characters. The characters that I was most looking forward to seeing was like the Kingdom Come universe.
Oh yeah, man, yeah.
Relegated. Completely fucking relegated to one-dimensional villains who pop up in books that didn't feature their name on it. To all right. Be the villains who came from the other city to battle these people, and they were, it was a complete waste of them. Them and the Wellstone characters were completely fucking wasted in the entire thing. It was so fucking frustrating.
Sorry, you've got 3 more minutes, Tom.
I've got 3 more minutes, okay, right. I should probably
wrap
this up.
If you feel the need to rag on it.
I could go for longer, man. I really could go for longer. The whole thing was subpar, terrible. I couldn't believe that I picked it up. You know what I'm like, I never rag on comics.
You're very conservative with comics, usually.
I normally say it was pretty good or average or really good.
But that's just fucking abysmal.
Fucking absolutely terrible. I've got to think I can wrap this up in 3 minutes.
I kind of wanted to read it up until now. Like the idea was sweet. I thought the idea was cool.
The idea was fucking well cool, but they didn't pull out from the history the right characters. They didn't use them in the right way. They didn't get the limelight. Oh, it was fucking absolutely into the story. You knew this big universe changing thing was happening, right? So that's why you're buying it. Ends, and nothing that happens in the actual story affects any of the ongoing books after this. Discreetly. Some of them.
So it's just like a reset.
But it's
button,
not
it?
From it. It's not nothing to do it. The changes in Batman happened in Batman before this fucking thing started, in the same way the Superman books.
Is this a damn pointless then?
Aye, absolutely damn pointless.
It's a way to get out of the 52 stuff. It's like reset it all.
Sneaky bastard.
You just kind of like, right, well, we're going to cancel a bunch of books and relaunch new ones, so there's got to be a universe changing event. So they came up with this utter garbage. But the thing is, with crossovers, sometimes they're shite. And sometimes they're good. But even when they're shite, they normally do what they advertise. This one didn't do that.
At all.
This one completely missed the mark, completely missed the point, and it cost a fucking lot of money. Well, it did if you were me, because I spent 60 quid on it.
I like how he bought like the first like 7 and thought, I'm going to keep going.
The thing was, it was coming out so rapidly, like, and I wasn't buying them and reading them straight away, so I was like, catching up as well, and then I was like, well, maybe the last couple of chapters will save it. I mean, if you've bought that many, you're not
committed.
You kind of got to the point where you're just like, oh well, it can't get any worse than that.
Still getting worse. I think overall there's only one thing can go in the hate locker here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely Boring Bad Guys.
Fuck you.
Well, my vote is I'm going to vote.
That's definitely going to be DC.
And I'll vote for DC then.
Right, good.
Yeah, kaboom!
You're in the hate locker, DC Convergence. Fuck you! Yeah! That's us done for another podcast. And how we felt it's gone this time, chaps?
Very well.
I was alright.
Oh, he's been practicing.
He's shown emotion.
That's been a pretty good one, actually. If anyone's got any feedback, anyone wants to get in touch with us or anything like that, we are, as ever, at Desert Wales on Twitter, at The Desert Wales on Instagram. Search for us on Facebook, just go for Desert Wales. I stumbled over my words there. And if you want to email us, it's thedesertwales@gmail.com. We have got 1.5 pages left until one of our comics is finished, so we're eagerly anticipating that one.
Yes, indeed.
And until the next time, everybody.
Cheery bye.
See you later.
Fucking. Have it, mate. Have it.
Bye.
Have it.